Everybody.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
Welcome once more to Reckless Attack, a 5th edition Dungeons & Dragons actual play podcast. I am GM Nathan, excited to sit down around the table with these excellent Fiat folks, as always. Hello, excellent folks.
Hi.
Hello. Well, hello, DM Nathan.
Hello. Let's all go around, remind our dear listeners who we are, who we'll be playing this evening, before we jump in to the merriments we have ahead of us. Starting with this person.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jonathan, and I play Checkers, the Grung Druid, and his trusty frog pals, Mango and Junior. And I think Checkers has a new best friend in the form of the Far-Eye Tatarunga Grumbingle, who is arguably the coolest Grung that he's ever seen. To my left.
Hi, everyone. I'm David, and I play the ever stalwart, ever companionable Cascarin Brightmane.
I was curious how many you were going to try to go for.
I had two, and that was it.
Yeah, I think that was an excellent deployment of restraint.
Yeah, yeah.
Where it's like, all right, I feel confident. Number one, absolutely.
Keep it going.
Number two, I got another word. Absolutely. And that's
and
enough.
I can end it whenever I want. There we go. And Cascarin has unlocked a new fear in that he never wants to become a scarecrow in a field of
crows. Yeah.
Bad time.
I thought about that a lot over the last week since we last
don't like
recorded
that room.
Episode. Yeah. Made me pretty happy.
No story. And to my left.
Hi, everyone. My name is Steve, and I am playing live from Nerhauser, Selv Esterlin.
Lively saxophone playing.
Thank you. And as always, like I said, Selv Esterlin is currently not sure what to do with himself because there's a lot of stuff going on and people to meet and really ghostly ruins, but not ruins to explore. So,
well, actively, you might be, that's on the morrow. Right now,
yeah.
You're like maybe blinded, you're maybe, kind of like feeling some sort of like sense of your smallness in the place of the grand cosmos,
We did just watch the sun impact the city, so.
You might say fall.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
From the
one
sky.
One night. And across from me.
Hi, everyone. I'm Sophie, and I play Valeska Carter, the human astric cleric astric of the Arcana domain. And Val is really struggling with all of her emotions right now. She died. She just watched.
Just for a second.
Thousands of people die again.
Old news. Decades ago.
And she has to go back. So
We're not done here yet.
And what's perverse is that she wants to go
she
back.
She wants to go back. She wants to go into the city of continuous death.
She wants to see it again.
Yeah. You guys just saw some fucked up shit, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was Sunfall. And also, by the way, Sunfall was the cap of one morning you have spent here.
That's true. Like 2 hours tops.
You've been, bopping around the city and witnessed all kinds of fun horrors, almost died and died multiple times. And then watched, again, the apocalypse roll out in front of you. And good news, they do daily matinee showings here. So you can just keep watching it for as long as you want, as long as you don't, kind of wither away into some sort of desiccated husk from the entropic effects of being here. All you guys see from up on the vantage point of the Sky Stalker is just the empty crater and barren, dangerous wastes of the Deadlands. Silence takes over the crew. No one says anything. Even Captain Livingstone has ceased barking orders, at least for the last, 45 seconds or so. And no one dares say or do anything as they just process what they have seen.
Cascarin takes a moment, because I'm imagining We are at that point in the adventure, in the road trip, where we have reached the destination, and now it's like the adrenaline is starting to fade, the energy is starting to come down, because we spent so much time getting here, and it's like we witnessed Sunfall, and the city was there, and now it's not, and all of a sudden, I'm imagining like it feels like the sun is so much more oppressive now that there is no kind of like end goal. All we have to do is wait until tomorrow. And it's like where there once was the ghostly city, now it's a proper kind of desert mirage. And there's nothing around but sand. And we can't go down and we can't go up. And we were already exhausted. And we spent a whole, you know, couple hours and a little mini skills challenge running out of that obelisk as fast as we could. And it's like Kaskrin is starting to become drained to the point where he's starting to worry a little bit.
And Checkers kind of breaks the silence on the ship, this tense moment after Sunfall, by just yelling out, "That was awesome!" And he runs over to Captain Livingstone. He's like, "Did you see that? At first we were like bzzz, all the way down the ship. We ran in there, and then we started running all the way through the bazaar, and then we were like as the birds flew in through me. And then we made our way all the way to the tower, and then there was a bzzap as Val got shocked half to death."
Yes, half.
And then this big old clang clang jailer guy, and then Val died. But
the captain is lightly taken aback by this stream of information, which is, to us, of course, as listeners, having experienced it, it makes sense for the most part. To him, truly unintelligible gibberish. So I'm to believe it was largely a success?
Almost. The downside is we have to go back, but with a much better plan this time.
Into the city with the, and he gestures at Checkers with the,
"I'm still going."
And he just gestures.
I'm doing my best Scarecrow impression right now.
Yeah, he's just gesturing at Checkers, continuing to list the horrible things that happened to you guys over the course of, again, 2.5 hours or so.
Not all of that, but while we were able to meet the Far Eye, we didn't have time to ask him the questions we needed, but he'll be back tomorrow. So we're going to meet, we're going to talk, and hopefully we'll get the answers we need to gain an edge over the Ultra Giant.
Tomorrow, you're saying the city returns?
As best we can tell, as best the Far Eye told us, this happens every day at noon.
Gods. And he unclenches his jaw for perhaps the first time in maybe days. This is, all right. Another day it is. Crew! We have another day out on these wastes. Prepare the ship. We'll fly her out another hour or so and settle down for rest." And people start, you know, kind of scurrying about doing their things.
Who's left? It's the Joes and the Tims?
All the Craigs. Anytime I say it, I pick the wrong group. Yeah. I know. All died.
No, the Craigs all died.
The Craigs all died.
All the Joes are here.
It's two Tims are here. And five Joes.
The Joes are the Joes. Think of them as the average Joes. They're the ship crew, the people who are just kind of scurrying about. And then there are Tims who are the engineers and are able to, who are the ones kind of like, again,
Val's best friends.
The ones that Val has bonded with the most specifically.
Tim, backwards, MIT.
There we go.
They're the engineers.
We'll by the end of this campaign, we will remember the literally two names of your crew members.
Never forget, Tim's.
That we have to do.
I think you're putting too much faith in us to remember that.
Yeah. And then we have Captain Livingstone, who's great. And then we have Simone, who's
I was
going to
say,
great.
Does someone remember the other crew member who is also still here?
Boo.
Speaking of, again, Simone is actually has not left Captain Livingstone's side since you guys have been here and remains there constantly, including right now. In this moment, as the human members of your crew start to scatter, The Seeker and the Burden, the two members of the Lasting Legion or the Bones, come up to you guys, and the Burden starts to talk, and the Seeker just puts one of her gauntleted hands on his shoulder, and he just kind of puts his pointed finger down a little bit. She says, "Are you guys all right?"
"We need a minute, but we'll be okay."
"Did I heard something? Val, are you okay?"
Val has been silent this whole time and is continuing to look out over the waste of Narhasser. And, like, she's looking at it in a way that I can only describe as, like, being a witness to it. Where, like, she wants desperately to look away and not feel these feelings, but, like, she feels she has to continue to watch.
The Seeker takes note of your silence and looks at the rest of you and says, "Well, once you all feel ready, I think it would make a lot of sense if you were to go below deck and relax, take a load off. It sounds like it's been a long day. We'll make sure that things are taken care of up here."
"Thank you."
And then Selval kind of like almost absently kind of put his hands down at his side and realized that he still has the small sack with material from Narhasser in it. And just patting it, does it feel like there's anything in there?
No. Whatever you added to it,
dang,
is gone.
Okay.
Along with the rest of the city. So, the day passes. As Captain Livingstone said, you guys travel for a little while just to kind of get a little space. But eventually find yourselves halting over what seems to be an indistinguishable part of this vast desert. The sails, which haven't been filled with wind for days now, continue to lay fallow. But the roar of the engine and the fire elemental starts to go down, and activity starts to slow down a little bit. And your day passes unimpeded. Is there anything you guys would like to do this day? As a reminder, right now, the plan vaguely is that the Far Eye will essentially do what he always does, or loves to do, aka break out of prison. And we'll just kind of be keeping an eye out for the approach of your skyship and try to triangulate a place that you guys deem to be a safe landing spot and meet up with you there. So, as Kaskarin said and felt, a lot of waiting around now. At least in terms of accomplishing your mission.
I would like to try to determine when the city comes back. Like, are we talking like a noon to midnight? It's gone. Midnight to noon, it's there. You know, something like that. So it kind of, like, to figure out if we have to go back a third time, what is the maximum amount of time that we could have there?
Makes sense.
I think Checkers spends a little bit of time commemorating the Golden Tree's time on the ship by carving in our little faces onto some of the woodwork along the walls and panels. Like, you know, the ship's already covered in runes and all kinds of different scratches and notes and things, but, you know, the Golden Tree was here, right?
Golden Tree was here.
Kaskarin has been trying to busy himself while we've been here, and it's just there's not that much to do. He's checked the steam pipes, he's tried to help the Tims and the Joes with their tasks, and he's at this point now where normally at the end of a long night you would sit by a fire and, like, you know, you have that kind of pensive look as you're reflecting at the end of the day. And the best that he can do is he's in the engineering room looking at the fire elemental. And there's, like, stuff going on around him, but he's trying to tune it out. because it continues to sink deeper and deeper as he thinks that Kaskrin made it his mission as part of the Golden Tree Adventuring Guild to protect his guildmates, and today he failed. And that hurts. It's not something that he would admit to Val, but it's that moment he replays over and over where she died.
Mm-hmm.
And Kaskrin could not protect her. And yes, the trip was grueling. It took a long time to get here. He's exhausted at any number of excuses. But it doesn't change the reality that if it not were not for the Far Eye, Val would not be here.
Yeah.
And so those are the thoughts kind of running through his mind as the day passes. He's trying to come to grips with.
After Val is done witnessing the scene of Narhasar, she'll go to her quarters. She's going to send a sending to her mom. And admit to her mom she died, but she's totally
wow.
fine.
Yeah,
via text message?
Yeah. I'm not going to map out the 25 words, okay. But it's going to be...
I was going to say, I had a soft suggestion for you. I think there is no way at this point, and I know we've role-played it differently a few times, and it's whatever, because also we haven't been too strict on the 25-word thing anyway. But, like, there is no way that Val and Val's mom do not have shorthand.
Yeah.
If for nothing else, then sending specifically.
Mm-hmm.
Where, like, there is a code, there is something, there is whatever.
They're speaking in, like, cryptid.
Exactly. Yeah.
They're both like stenographers, and it's like every word is 25 words.
Right. Yeah. Like you guys have found a way to just squeeze as much efficiency in that 25 words as possible. And I think that's extraordinarily in character. I think we can all agree that 25 words, no matter how far you stretch it, is not really going to make a mom feel tons better about the whole, like, I just died today message. But you at least can give a little nuance and context. To a degree.
Yeah.
Do you accept the collect call from Bob? We add a baby. It's a boy.
Yeah.
Yep. 100%. But yeah, so Val will say she died. She was brought back by the Far Eye. And also say she witnessed Sunfall. And that's a lot to process in a day. And, like, I love you.
A lot to squeeze in 25 words. But, again, I think Val and her mom could do it. You don't get a message back for a bit. It's certainly an amount of time that feels much longer because of the wait. And because, similarly, I feel like you and your mom are very decisive when it comes to your sendings. I mean, you are meticulous and make sure you craft it well,
mm-hmm.
but you get it and you're starting the process, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I too will not go into the exact cryptic or whatever 25 words. Your mom spends the equivalent of 24 of the 25 words saying that she's glad you're okay. She hopes that you are taking some time for yourself tonight and are resting and are careful. And there is some unsaid anxieties, and uses the 25th word to ask clarifying questions about all the historical details that you've also encountered that day.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
At the end of the night, you guys start splitting your meager, sad rations.
It's mostly sand.
I think Val has some...
And frog water.
Yeah.
Low-level spells to do create mush and water.
I think mush had been created at least once before. And again, they're pretty hard rationing, especially kind of right now when you're in the midst of the adventuring day. They don't want to... They understand you have spell slots, and they're precious. But... There is, we'll even say, I think it makes a lot of sense that there would be some room that is kind of the mess, right? Where at least a small gathering space, I'm imagining that it has a fireplace. It is hot as hell during the day, but it's probably cold as hell during the night. And unlike every other fire you tried to light out here, this one burns fairly brightly because it is fueled by the fire elemental's magic. And everyone's tired. It's been a hard few days. I mean, a week ago or whatever, these guys were just like out sailing the skies, hunting and, you know, surviving and adventuring. And it's been a bit of a shift and a hard shift. But there are smiles traded, some jabs, some jokes. And maybe you remember that earlier today, they came and got you. And so the night passes.
Canonically, we still have all the alcohol, right?
That is true. We do all have sealed alcohol.
Yeah. Is that true?
Yeah. So we definitely bust into that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Is it your idea, Checkers?
Yes, because I'm also I'm also passing out little frog-shaped fruit snack good berries to all the pirates, and it's very unsatisfying for every one of them just to have to, like, cut into a little fruit snack and eat that for dinner.
as if it were the very thinly sliced bread from the cartoon.
Yep, yes, that's exactly.
But don't they feel full afterwards? Yeah,
they feel full, but, like, imagine Captain Livingstone
having
to split a good berry with someone. A little frog snack with his first mate. And,
with his snake.
Yeah, that's all the food that he's going to get today. Like, that's the vibe. So we're really digging into the alcohol today.
Yes, got it. Spirits are loosened a little bit.
Yeah.
As we're all plastered. Stand up straight.
And I'll be happy to play a little bit of the flute while we're doing this. Get a good
stop the ship from wobbling.
Get a good desert chanty going.
Spirits are lifted. It is still a complex dynamic. Mm-hmm. But you all survived another day. Pointedly look at Sophie/Val. And so, out in the wilds, everyone in this room knows that's a good day. So you guys sleep through the night. Self, you kind of wake up throughout the night. And 11, not there. Midnight, kind of where you're like, this feels like kind of the first reasonable time that it would start showing up. Not there. It is not until first light that you start to see just barely there. Almost like it's a trick of the light at first. The city reforming in its space. So, as a reminder, you all take another level of exhaustion.
Boo.
For Stia still being here. That is another 5 feet off of your max move speed. That is another -2 to all d20 rolls.
That's so bad.
Yeah.
And another -1 to your various spell save DCs, etc.
Jeez.
Val, again, you rested, you slept, etc. You're feeling a little out of it. You know, you look down at your hands. It's still there. You can interact with things. No one's like, huh, Val, you're looking a little see-through today. It's like mentally.
Nathan?
Yeah.
What happened when Val fell asleep last night?
You know, normal stuff.
What normal stuff?
Normal, she went to her Mind Palace library and talked to Vakri.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
It was definitely still
there. It was like, you know, nighttime, right? That's usually when you're in the Mind Palace. Of course, Vakri checked up on you. I think we've established he's pretty aware of what your experience is.
Sophie, am making sure Vakri's still there.
Vakri's still there. Vakri's still there. And so kind of once you guys reconnect, right, kind of whatever that means for you guys, you sit down to start, you know, kind of cataloging and working through your day, working through what you've learned, looking up things, trying to recall the usual stuff. And it's just, both of you are just not, like, there. You know? Like, you're getting distracted. You keep replaying the sunfall over and over when you should be concentrating. And you realize that you guys are sitting at farther away at ends of the table than you would be. And one of you notices and you're like, oh, that's weird. And you, you know, kind of go over. Just you're feeling distant from life. That's how I'll put it. And you wake up in the morning. And again, both of you just were off. But, you know, hey, new day. Whatever. And you just are really not mentally and emotionally kind of as present as normal. For today, at least today, you have disadvantage on initiative checks and all charisma checks. You're just not there.
And now, a word from our sponsor.
Hello, this is your pilot speaking. I would like to welcome you to Reckless Airlines. Our total flight time for this episode is approximately 1 hour, and we will be cruising at an altitude of 2,000 frog stacks. In a little bit, the flight attendants will be by with complimentary clips and excerpts from previous Reckless Attack episodes. We know you have a lot of choices when it comes to 5th edition Dungeons & Dragons actual play podcasts, and we would like to thank you for choosing ours. If you enjoyed your experience during today's episode, please be sure to fill out the in-flight survey and leave us a rating or review, or tell a friend. Book your next flight with us at www.recklessattack.com, and thank you for listening.
Everyone shuffles back to the on top of the deck in their own time. Captain Livingstone, already at the helm, has his giant constrictor snake kind of wrapped around his neck and dangling off of him, and kind of a almost like a, no pun intended, a, you know, kind of think of a boa,
yeah,
full look. And he's looking a little haggard. And there's a faint scent in the air of the fun you had last night. Especially the amount that you drank on a stomach full of only a good berry.
Yeah.
Says,
morning. Ready to turn her around whenever you all are.
And Castron kind of steadies himself coming up the stairs. Like,
so your morning constitution checks are hard for you all too, right?
Checkers is bright purple in the corner, just shriveled husk as well.
Desperately needing rehydration.
Right.
Why don't we get moving? We only have a couple hours till sunfall again. We need to make the most of it. I don't think we could stay here another day. We definitely don't have the drink for it.
The crew will be pleased to hear. All right. Craig, you know what to do. Craig, and you do your usual, and everyone kind of starts moving out like zombies, doing their normal activities, just at like half speed.
Oh, he killed
the Craig.
Damn it!
The Craigs are the ones that died!
Joe, go on.
Go, Joe!
Do... You know what to do, your thing, the usual Joe, other Joe, you go do that too. Yep, usual.
And slowly but surely, creaking along as the rest of her crew is indeed also creaking along, the Skystalker turns and heads towards the city. It is still there. It's a different time of day than when you guys first arrived. It's pretty early, I would imagine. And the streets aren't quite as busy as when you first pulled up. Is there a place that you guys would like to land?
I was originally thinking, could we get a view of the ritual area? But then I was thinking, oh, is the Pentarchy there and they're just going to shoot us down? And like that.
Yeah, and it's like super underground
So. Okay, gotcha.
But yeah, no, they would probably blast the shit out of you for sure. Yeah.
I was like, is there a bridge that we can meet under?
I mean, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there's definitely a bit massive river. There is a massive river going through here, all that kind of stuff for sure. So yeah, you guys can meet under a CD bridge and get like kind of action dropped down.
Yeah, hell yeah.
It is a fast drop off for you guys. It is like how high and fast can we get away with, and like maybe drop you guys into the river, you know, kind of so you can splash down and like get the fuck out of there very quickly. And it's still pretty early in the day, so there are still some strange long shadows for sure underneath this bridge. And from in the depths of one of these ghostly shadows. Well, look what the river flowed in. And out walks Far-Eye Grumbingle. He looks a little different today, actually. Yesterday, you saw him kind of in his prison attire. Today, he is now much more opulently presented. I guess the easiest way for me to put it is imagine how Checkers dresses, but then kind of the druid version of that. It is layers and layers of different pelts and leaves and things that are certainly not native to anything around here, but is here fully resplendent in all of his in his far-eye glory.
I have a question, actually.
Yes.
Is he wearing a similar kind of necklace to what Checkers has?
That's a great question, Checkers. Would he be?
He would be. And it's mostly... It's not exactly the same, but the symbolism is there.
Mm-hmm. And unlike... Like, Checkers doesn't... I feel like doesn't always hide his necklace, but certainly all of these symbols are very prominently displayed now on the far right, for certain. Says, good to see you, five. Assuming Mango has been recasted. All right, everybody. What are we getting into today?
Val will say, I think, first of all, we have a lot of questions for you to figure out more about you so we can know why we're here for you.
Mm-hmm. Reasonable. Happy to answer your questions. But that also sounds boring.
In that case, how about you take us to the coolest place here that you have seen?
And Selv looks directly at Checkers when he says that.
And while we're on the way there, we can have our more boring discussion as to what we need from you while we're going to the coolest place that you have seen here.
Smash cut. The six of you are on the top of the giant obelisk.
Yeah! I was going to say, is it like going to be a weird opposite thing where he loves the lowest point that you can get to?
Unfortunately, no, because the lowest point you can get to is a very dangerous ritual chamber at this moment. The wind is whipping around up here. So, is this... Do you like it? What do you think, huh?
Checkers just has a huge grin plastered on his face, and he's like, I'm on top of the world!
And because of your suction cup-like feet, you can be on an incline, like, leaning out if you want to be.
Cass, come over here, check this out!
And Cassgren is trembling, because he just blacked out the entire experience of climbing up here.
No idea how
he's here, but he's like, oh, God, oh, no!
So, like, I can get you guys, like, everywhere but, like, two places in this city.
What are the two places?
Well, one of them is where you saw yesterday, down in where the whole, like, sunfall ritual thing is. But there's just, like, a lot of zapping that even to me is, like, I don't like ending my days early, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So
I get that.
And then the other is Celestia Dreamweaver's like bedroom.
Is it like behind a lot of very powerful locks or something?
Boy, is it. But anywhere else, I mean, like, I could do that, like, pretty super, no problem. So, like, if you have, like, more interesting things to do while we talk about the boring questions, that would be, like, really ideal for me. Just because, like, it was interesting that you guys are all alive, right? You guys are cool. Like, oh, man, world, it's progressed, like, 40 years. That's crazy. But, like, you know, the novelty's worn off a little bit. So, like, we got to, you know, kind of keep things going. I'll break the fiction for a moment. The Far Eye and you all have no idea why you're here. But, you know, you want to talk things through a little bit. But you kind of got to, I'll put it this way, you kind of got to play the Far Eye's game.
Yeah.
As this goes on. So, I, GM Nathan, am telling you, the Far Eye can get you access to almost anywhere in this city. If there's a place you wanted to check out, some information you wanted to gather, someone you wanted to visit, something you wanted to do to keep the Far Eye a little bit entertained.
My question to you, Nathan, is because this is Narhasar and mm-hmm. was the capital city of the Pentarchy, there would be scholars here from almost every type of scholarly pursuit that you could possibly imagine.
And some of them even here by their own free will.
Yeah, even that. So, the Selv has always been interested in what the hell happened to the dragons. So, do I know of any famous historians or researchers that concentrated on dragons and perhaps even the eggs that were living in Narhasar at the time of Sunfall?
Smash cut. Selv, you are sitting in a parlor, and you are sitting behind a ghostly white curtain. You are in the parlor of noted scholar Weaver Barba, and I don't know whether this is something that Selv knew about, like had heard this name before or something. But one way or the other, the Far Eye has delivered. And so you're able to talk to this individual who was a bit of a crackpot back in his day, but, you know, is at least opinionated.
And he explains, well, it's actually very interesting the timing and location of where the dragons went off to. It was all part of a great climactic battle, of course, right? And the saints, the dragons, had banded together and were fighting five greater dragons who were empowered by some sort of thing. And it was over, and he has, I don't know if you can see over, and he, like, is holding up. You just can barely see his, like, hands holding up a large map of the area. And he's like, as you can see, circled here in this general area is the wide swath of area where the large battle took place. And I don't remember if this has been made clear before. It's probably something maybe that Selv would have put together previously. But the battle and where the dragons disappeared and where the saints disappeared is your second stop on this journey. It is right around the Shattered Abyss. It is one of the most infested with monsters, dangerous places that no one ever comes back from, much like the place that you guys are actively in right now, in the whole world. And he says,
and so there's actually some very interesting theories that within this impenetrable area of monsters and aberrations and such is actually perhaps some sort of large portal, perhaps, or rift in reality, or many such interesting options. I personally like to believe that, in fact, the dragons are living among us. Just
hidden, ready for their moment to surprise us. And then you're reminded that he was indeed a tiny bit of a crackpot.
While he's saying that, because I just had this truly, absolutely insane thought pop into my head, mm-hmm. to the point where Selv might actually just kind of like utter this out loud and not realize it, but just say,
what if they didn't go anywhere? What if they got, like, we just think they disappeared, but what if they got, like, flung forward in time to a point where they will come back, but for them, no time will have passed?
Oh, that's very interesting, but how many of my novels / scholarly works have you read? Because I think I've laid out very clearly that they are among us to this day. Hidden is various races and political positions and
yes,
such.
Yes, 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 of course, of course. Is there a way to identify them as they walk among us?
And then I'll kind of let them go.
How much time do you have, dear boy? And he goes on. And you get a little mechanical bonus. Everyone in these little vignettes, spoiler, you're going to get a little prize.
Oh,
little
nice.
Reward. Yourself for this one, unfortunately, will be determined at a later time, or will be revealed to you at a later time.
I think where the far I would take the party next, at Kaskrin's request, is underneath one of the citadels. I'm imagining it's underneath the one belonging to the dwarf, the creator of tools, the crafter of objects.
Foreman Ferris Hardvek, I believe, is the
Hardvek's
name.
Citadel. There is a large vault where there are rows upon rows of objects of focus that have been collected during the age of magic and studied. And some of them are like, they're pretty cool. They do different things. Others are like novelty items and tchotchkes that were created with powerful emotion, but some of them are like
air fresheners.
Yeah, or like very niche edge, where it's like, if you need it to do this one thing, there's literally no more powerful object as long as it fits this very specific definition.
It's like a box with a hinge, and if you open it up, it fills up nearby buckets filled with water.
Something, just very specific things.
And they've been kind of arrayed. They've got like plaques and kind of descriptions of things that they do. So Kaskrin is walking through this with Farai, looking through all of these extremely powerful objects that are ghostly.
This one lets you shoot swords at people.
That's so cool, though. I want one that shoots swords.
It is very cool.
And like, there's one of those pro bass fish plaques that
the singing bass.
Yeah, the singing bass.
Big adventure. I think the Adventure Zone already did this joke, so we can't go too deep down this. Unfortunately,
gives you telepathic powers, but and Kaskrin kind of like brings this back of, you know, what some of these magical objects do, but like, would they help us take down the Ultra Giant in some way? Are any of these kinds of obscure niche abilities useful in dealing with spirits or elementals? And not so much because he thinks he can take some of these objects, but just so he can continue to jog the Farai's memories and come at things at a different angle with these kinds of magical objects as reference.
And breaking into the most high security vaults in all of Narhasar.
Yeah. For some reason, I've got the image that the vault is like an infinite mirror almost, where each object is just in a glass cube surrounded, and it just like goes in every direction, and there's just objects everywhere.
They have their like own mirror image.
Yeah, exactly.
Or, like the prophecy thing in the Ministry of Magic for Harry Potter.
Yeah, kind of.
Just like all those globes on all those shelves.
Right, exactly. And it's just like
row after row after row.
Yeah, and like the sheer number of objects that the Pentarchy has collected. And obviously they use the most powerful ones, but they research the rest of them.
As you are going through this, and again, just kind of talking through all of it, you come across a very interesting piece of armor.
Ooh, okay.
Defara is like, I don't know. It's just like, that one's really boring and whatever. Like, you know, it doesn't shoot any amount of knives, let alone swords. So it's kind of useless. So, like, check out this one, though. And it is the fantasy equivalent of, like, a robotic puppy that does those, like, backflips or whatever. Yeah. And you kind of take a look at it. And it's just, it's so interesting to you. To call it a simple bracer would not be doing its girth justice. Kaskrin, over the last few months, you have, I think collectively, all everyone at the table here, you know, their characters have kind of thrown themselves into various community activities, various hobbies, you know, ways to spend your free time when you're not out, you know, kind of slaying bad guys.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously for Kaskrin, one of the primo ones is wrestling.
It's gotta be, yeah.
And so you, something resonates in your soul as you look at this. It takes you a second, but you start to realize why it is so interesting to you. Because you know, deep down, that this, even in its kind of strange spectral form, is a relic of St. Thixius.
Nice.
What?
As this thing calls out to you, you realize that you've taken a step towards it,
mm-hmm.
that it is you closer. You're able to kind of just snap out of it enough, but there's something there that transcends all of this strange ethereal separation that is between you and really almost everything else in this city. And the far eye from somewhere around your, I guess, I don't know, shoulder, elbow? I don't remember exactly how short he is in comparison to you, says, wait, can you smell that?
Can I smell it?
You definitely can't.
Ah, shoot, okay. It is perfumed with the sweet sweat of St. Thixius.
That explains it.
This magical treasure!
This magical treasure that you're looking upon is a very simple, you know, kind of just covering for a forearm. It looks like it, at its base, is just a, you know, kind of leather covering. But all wrapped around it is a, you know, those scarves that people hold up at, like, soccer and football matches that have, like, the name of the team that they're supporting on?
Uh-huh.
And it is that, and in an ancient script, you probably don't speak this ancient script, but you recognize the symbols, says Thixius on it.
Hell yeah.
And it is wrapped around this and almost kind of forms like a it would go over a clenched fist. You know, kind of imagine like a monk-esque, you know, kind of like rapping.
Yeah. It's written over very much like Saint Adidas.
Yes, precisely.
Kaskrin feels the blessing of the saint in this moment. Whether or not like anything's actually really happening, he recognizes the hours, the sweat and blood that he's poured into owning his craft of wrestling. And in the same way that the bracer reaches out to him, he reaches out towards his ethereal bracer.
Instantly, you're transported. You're getting just small little flashes and snippets in front of you. A grand theater coliseum. And in this moment, there's four up on the stage that are wrestling, grappling. Seems like some sort of a tag team match, if you will. And there in the middle, unmistakable, is St. Thixius. The crowd is going insane. They are witnessing something special, as they always do whenever St. Thixius is out on the mat. Suddenly, you see his tag team ally betrays him, goes to the other side, turns on him. It's a 3-on-1. The only thing that saves him in this moment is the round ending. He goes back to his corner alone this time, betrayed. And you see from the crowd, a young boy, little dragonborn holding up this scarf that says Styxius on it, tears streaming down his face.
As they are mine.
Just, he's devastated. And he's just screaming something. A snot bubble forms in his dragonborn snout. And he reaches back and throws his scarf up into the arena. And you see Styxius catch it. He looks at it. He looks at this child. And he meaningfully wraps it around his right arm. And he goes, he wrestles like he's never wrestled before, inspired by the generous show of support by one of the people who'd eventually become one of his star pupils. You realize, as you're kind of coming back to reality, a few things. That this item is Styxius's Vambrace of Vambrose. Vambrose, of course, being the name of
correct.
His star pupil.
Yes.
And that this was an item that St. Styxius didn't keep on him particularly. That's why you maybe didn't recognize it at first, but actually was something that was passed down from wrestler to wrestler through a series of kind of mentorships, and it was a part of kind of an acclaimed ritual that was, you know, became a centuries-long tradition. The other thing you realize is that this is now on your hand. It is wrapped. It is no longer ethereal. It is real. And it is too girthy for your arm. It is sagging.
Of course.
At least at first, as you look and you realize, in the way that, you know, all great students must step into the shoes of their master,
Chaskrin's forearm grows to the size of the Vambrace.
Yes.
To meet the need, the strength, the power, the girth of St. Styxius. Yes.
Correct. You now have a strength of 23.
Oh, hell.
Oh, what?
Cool.
Wow. But only in one arm.
No, it courses through your arm. St. Styxius, you know, he's not about show muscles, but he does, you know, it's still a balanced.
Yeah,
you gotta have
a
balanced physique.
I'm literally just imagining Kaskrin with like one crab claw.
Yeah, it's at first, that is the case. And again, it kind of spread, the magic spreads out and it kind of goes to kind of adapt to his body eventually. But at first, it is a weird, meaty claw. In addition, and this is assuming that you attune to this item.
Mm-hmm.
And so it would not be in effect at this moment, but you can no longer be moved against your will. By any
nice.
Force.
Wow. Emotionally?
By any force.
Hell yeah.
Once per short rest, you now have the ability to have the reaction of reversal.
Nice.
Where if someone tries to move you against your will, instead, you can have them make the saving throw against their effect instead.
Nice.
You still take the damage, but
they
will get moved.
Hell yeah.
Additionally, a final action. Once per long rest, bring it in, bro. Named, of course, after the famous
correct.
Moment
Vambro,
of
yeah.
brotherhood with Vambrose. It is, takes a bonus action to activate. And until the start of your next turn, any ally who enters into melee range with you during their next turn and narrates, giving you a little fist bump, can heal 4d6 plus your charisma.
Wait, I'm sorry, 4d6?
Yeah. Holy shit.
Bring it in, bro.
Yeah, bring it in,
you,
bro.
If you move to him and give him a little fist bump.
Yeah, and anyone can do it, right?
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Val is only sustained by Kaskrin's side of their comment.
Things to think about.
Bring it in, bro.
Maybe a bonus action. I'll need to see it. I'll need to see it in practice. But this thing is real. It is on you, and now the display case is empty. And you feel like you were reached out to in this moment by someone or something, or perhaps a line of someone's.
And Kaskrin is going to show his appreciation. He has an inkling of what's just happened. He understands the precious gift that has been bestowed upon him after a long line of wrestlers. And he raises his crab claw to his chest in a show of thanks, in the same way of after a bout, you show appreciation for your opponent, whether you have won or lost. You simply show appreciation for the fight. And he extends that gratitude to Sir Sixtius, to Vambrose, and to the long line of wrestlers that have come before him and will follow after him.
And now I'll hand you the card for Cass's Sixtius's Vambrace of Vambrose to copy onto your character sheet.
Hell
at
yeah.
Your own time.
Checkers just raises his hand as we're walking and just goes, "I want to ride a dragon." And he specifically remembers how the party learned about Valda Wormthrawler,
mm-hmm.
one of the members of the Pentarchy, who is not mentioned particularly often, but who has a citadel here. We ran through the Wyvern Room inside of the obelisk. So Checkers is like, "I want to ride one of those. And I know a guy who can hook us up. The far right.
This guy."
Yeah.
Smash cut. You guys are back in the Wyvern pens.
I specifically request that we have to go through the scarecrow room to get here.
Absolutely not. Enjoy your dragons.
That of all the requests that you guys put forward is the one that the far right balks at the most.
Okay.
But he is committed to shenanigans.
Mm-hmm.
And after you all hop away in scarecrow form from horrible, horrible crows that are questioning when the last time you've really been moisturizing has been.
One really hits hard.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm too old to hear that one, Nathan.
Yep, they, as both of you are, you make your way, and a toss of rancid meat, a surreptitious lock undoing chaos immediately spreads. And sure enough, in a moment, both of you have found steeds.
Nice.
And are soaring above the city. First question, is Mango with you?
I think Mango has his own wyvern.
Got it. Okay.
And we're all just flying around.
Also good and perfect. It's not going well for him, but that's to be expected. You are very nauseous.
Mm. Yes.
This is not a nice experience.
Great.
Physically, it's not a nice experience. The emotions might be overriding it just enough.
Mm-hmm.
You're having type 2 fun right now.
Yeah.
You can tell how much fun you should be having. And that's what makes it even more painful. And that's how truly bad and awful this is. It's not sky sickness. It is nothing else. It is truly just you are touching a big ghost.
Hey, how you doing over there?
Good. As he scrapes out his stomach a little bit into the wind.
It seems like you're not doing well. Like, I had an idea of how much fun you would be having, and it's not enough fun.
And it's not just the ghost sickness. It's not just flying around in the air, but Checkers has actually been holding on to something.
Not his lunch.
Yeah, not his lunch. Part of the reason why Checkers wanted to come up here with the Far Eye was to kind of hawk about the Ingaton.
Mm-hmm.
And
with his tribe, where he comes from.
Right.
Yeah, like where the Far Eye comes from.
Exactly.
His big part of his identity. He is chieftain of the Ingaton of his time, betrayed horrifically by someone in the Pentarchy, but still very much like, oh, yeah, Ingaton, all about it. But not fully defines himself by it, but in a really important part of it, his life. The Far Eye's, that is.
And I don't even know how much of this makes it across, because, you know, we're flying through the air, the wind is just whipping around. But Checkers takes this moment to kind of share a little bit about himself and how the Ingaton of this time have been, you know, greatly diminished, essentially self-exiled. And how he was set up to be the next leader, the next Far Eye of the Ingaton. But he ran away from that responsibility. He decided that it wasn't for him. And that's kind of what led him to leave the island, escape, essentially, and find his way to the mainland. And he still feels somewhat guilty about it, having left his family, his siblings. And I don't know, maybe he's looking for some kind of absolution from the Far Eye of this time. But he and the Far Eye are kind of flying around on these wyverns. And it is probably the first time that he really shares any of this.
Uncharacteristically of both of you, Checkers is sharing and the Far Eye is listening. Silently. And again, wind is whipping everywhere. And he doesn't immediately respond. You can see him kind of shift around in his wyvern seat. And he says, "How many of the rites of water do they teach nowadays?"
"Only 49 of them."
"That should be enough. All right. Remember, for a moment with me, humor an old Far Eye. Remember, rite 35.
And these are things that Checkers has had drilled into his head from a very young age. So, you know, rite 35 just kind of springs to mind immediately.
"Take your deep breaths. And then hold it. Imagine you're plunging underwater. And then breathe again."
So I actually want to add to this too.
Please.
This is probably a dance that was done with the water spirits of the island. So as Checkers is thinking about this, he takes a deep breath, and it's this sort of rhythmic breathing that he does. And he begins to kind of go through the motions of this dance. So it kind of looks like he's pushing and pulling with a dance partner.
As you guys are circling in the sky, the Far Eye calls out, "I was really excited to be Far Eye. I knew I was going to crush it. And you know what? I think I was a pretty good one until, you know, like, dramatic betrayal, pentarchy, whatever. But also, the way that we pick Far Eyes is dumb." "It's always been
Isn't
dumb.
Isn't it?
It's very dumb. I wanted to. I wanted it. And everyone thought I would be good at it, and I was. And so, you know, it was kind of like a nice, like, mandate. But also, like, I didn't really get to, like, choose. I was lucky. And it pains me to hear that my people are diminished, are away from the world. Because, well, I've had a lot of time to think. And I think the reason that I was in this whole mess in the first place was because we were so far away from everything. We were so isolated, so whatever. And then the first time that anyone cool, promising power, being like, I'm a person from the Pentarchy. I'll do cool stuff for you guys. Everyone was like, seems good to us. And then, well, bad stuff happens. To be honest, I love that you're out adventuring and being a guilder. We didn't experience enough. Nothing new was ever coming in, you know?"
And Checkers wasn't really sure what he was expecting from the Far Eye when he told him this. You know, it was a toss-up between "how dare you abandon your people" and "wow, sick, cool." But at this moment, Checkers really wishes that he had more time here in Narhasar. And maybe even for the first time in his life. that he had more time on Rixia.
The rite comes to its conclusion. And the conversation and the breathing and the flying was so intensive of resources. It took up so much attention and time, as well as not vomiting, that during the course, you realized that you don't really need to puke anymore.
Oh.
Maybe because you're empty.
Yeah.
That's probably part
right.
of it.
Yeah.
But you don't, you actually don't feel nauseous right now. It occurs to you to look down. And you are much closer on the light spectrum to the wyvern that you are riding than your mortal form.
Okay.
You are a bit incorporeal. And so you hear the Farite yell out over the whipping winds and flapping wings. Just don't let all that time and effort and tradition and all the beauty of it be forgotten. Just remember, some of those rites are like good and helpful or whatever. And the best time to turn to them is when you're in trouble. And so you, Checkers, once per long rest, Mango, as a reaction, being a spiritual being that he is, can, in reaction to you guys taking, to either of you taking damage, can turn you both incorporeal until the start of your next turn.
Sick.
And so you, you know that this is a special moment, a special thing, that this is not representative of what you have unlocked in yourself or maybe remembered, but you three are able to fly up above this city for what seems like as long as you could possibly want.
Val, as always, wants information. And we'll ask the Farai to go to Celestia Dreamweaver's personal library.
Mm-hmm.
Because the restricted section of Agmar contains a lot of powerful stuff. A lot of dangerous information.
Mm-hmm.
So Val can't quite fathom what would be in Celestia's personal collection.
Is there something in particular that you're hoping to find? Is it information? Is it power? Is it something you can make a pact with, perhaps?
I've already got one of those.
Double pact.
Mm-hmm.
I, Sophie, was sitting here thinking what Val would want to learn.
Mm-hmm.
Obvious answer was, how do we defeat an ultra giant?
Yep.
But given how weird Val has been feeling and how distant specifically she felt from Fakhri, in the library, I think she would look for information about what she is. As much as she tries to focus on what she should, of like information to be more powerful and help us in this moment, I think she just keeps drifting back to answers of her origins, of why Fakhri like lives within her.
As I recall, Fakhri has been, you know, he was a little protective of the information, certainly, of like, hi, so I'm actually a horrible aberration from, you know, the four times who desperately wants to destroy your whole, like, way of life and mortal kind, etc. but has been otherwise relatively forthcoming about it.
No, he's like the good one.
Exactly. And they, right. And, yeah. and there presumably are others, he's kind of said. But one of the things everyone is really murky on is like, why you? Like, why specifically someone like you or anyone mm-hmm. would get kind of like chosen for this, so to speak, or how it works. I'll put it this way. I hope it doesn't surprise you, Sophie, that it appears that this was also a subject of interest for Celestia Dreamweaver. That she, or the Pentarchy, or who knows, had additional interest in this topic as well. She specifically called you out when she made everyone fall asleep and mm-hmm. seemed very interested and maybe even aware of what was happening. And the Far Eye was not interested in being in a library.
Fair.
But gave you kind of a time limit of like, all right, here's how much, like, you only have so long, and then guards come and it gets really messy really fast. So be in, be out, and we'll meet up here. Back under the bridge. And stepping into this library is jarring. You had to be blindfolded to get in because the methods to get into it, the Far Eye simply said, it's just better if you don't see it.
Knowing Celestia Dreamweaver makes sense.
And you find yourself in, it is not as, you've been in some impressive libraries. Mm-hmm. You've pointedly been in some impressive libraries in your day. And this one is much more of average person who is interested, who is very interested in books, as opposed to mind-bending physics of unlimited bookcases. There's hundreds and hundreds of books in here. Mm-hmm. But, you know, ultimately it's
like
here.
Her research books.
Yes.
It's like the books she uses frequently.
The good shit.
Yeah.
She knows all the stuff in all the other books already. She doesn't need them here. This is what she turns to when she needs answers mm-hmm. or is trying to put things together. And again, you've grown up around books and people who love books your whole life, and it is immediately obvious that that's what this is. You find three books. They are deeply annotated. It's at least half journal at this point. Mm-hmm. And you know you only have 30 or 40 minutes to like even speed read through any of this. Even here, the tendrils of the library extend. Val's heard many voices in her head, as we all have. Who hasn't? But you recognize this one as your patron, the bookworm. As you recall, you have been charged with the further accumulation of literary knowledge. Mm-hmm. And somehow, some way, your patron knows that you have found just that. And you know what your duty is, what your sworn pact as a card-carrying member of the library is, and it is to obtain this knowledge. Once per day, you can memorize a book. It takes some time to go back through it, mm-hmm. but essentially, you are able to spend 10 minutes, absorb none of the information, but create a duplicate copy in your mind palace.
Cool.
Yeah.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah.
And you would not be able to access that knowledge until you have slept, mm-hmm. but then the next day, it'll be as if you read the entire book.
I don't think I or Val know how to process how cool this is.
It's just, you sit down and you're like, I don't have time for this. And so you're trying to maybe slam through as much as possible, trying to just desperately retain information. And the bookworm doesn't have to say anything, but you just feel that spark of power inside you, and it becomes like a movie montage where you just start flipping pages faster and faster and faster and faster until you're done. And you just realize that, like, okay, I didn't, like, understand what I read, but I have it. I have it. So really, the timeline is so short between searching for the books and all of that that you're able to absorb kind of the contents of one. But it's in there.
Hell yeah.
You meet back under the bridge.
That seedy bridge.
I do imagine that the Farai did take one of the objects of focus that shoots knives. And it's just showing how it works
it's
in
just
the river.
Bang, bang, shooting it up into the air. Okay. Well, first of all, best day I've had in like many decades. So thank you.
Same.
Dibs.
Very cool.
All right. I have a few ideas. He turns to Checkers. All right. Some ways that I might be able to help you all. And we'll workshop this together. Checkers, what do you think about me helping you guys summon an Ultra Giant?
Yeah. No. We should summon an Ultra Giant.
Ultra Giant fight.
No.
Well, and then it could be like, because yours is like a fiery, like lava, and we could do like a water or maybe like a ice kind of guy.
Val, please, let me have this. Just this once.
And then like,
I need it.
No. What happens when one dies?
Well, I mean, I had follow-up questions, which is like, you know, how much time do you guys like think you have? A couple years?
Maybe a month.
Maybe.
Okay. And then like, yeah, then how much control would you like want over the second other Ultra Giant? Some?
Total control.
None.
Okay. So we'll circle back to that one.
Let's make that plan C, and we'll see what the other is.
Maybe Z.
Okay, next one. Kaskrin.
Yes.
You're a big tough guy, right? You're like a...
I pride myself in bigness and toughness.
Yes, you know.
As you hide the pajama hat. Yeah. The silk hat.
Okay.
You can be big and tough and love comfort.
That's fair.
Is the Farai going to suggest he turns Kaskrin into an Ultra Giant?
Not yet.
Kaskrin, please. I need this one.
Please, just
me.
One I've ever asked you for anything in my whole life.
I just need you to become an Ultra Giant and fight the other one, please.
All right. You're like, you're Gilders, well-respected, it sounds like. If you vouch for someone, probably hold some weight. So you guys take me with you, be like your new kind of like wartime chieftain, like kind of take over the city, really stick it to that jerk Celestial Dreamweaver, and then like I'm like in charge of everything, and then like I lead, you know, to like a victory or whatever.
Can we do that? You mean we would make you the leader of Nurhasser?
No, of Agmar.
Of Agmar?
Yeah.
Can you leave Nurhasser?
I mean, not currently. No. But, like, it'd be cool if I could, though, right? And, like, so maybe it's that.
I mean, you also, I'm guessing you were never able to get far enough away to not be caught in Sunfall. So maybe on a ship you could get far enough away.
I've tried. He gets a faraway stare, glazed eyes. So I've tried getting out of this city.
Oh, the wyverns.
But yeah, maybe with you guys it'd be different.
I think we can and maybe should try to get you out of here. I don't know about taking over Agmar.
We live in a democratic system of Agmar. There's no one official ruler.
We're an anarcho-syndicus commune. We take turns to act as a sort of executive for the week, but all decisions of that officer have to be ratified by a special bi-weekly meeting.
I'm less interested in this, but we'll come back. Val, so this might be a little sensitive, but I think you can handle it.
Yeah.
Maybe you guys actually are supposed to live here and, like, be ghosts with me, and we can have ghost adventures through, like, and they, like, through the, like, power of friendship can, I don't know, like, stop the ritual maybe or something as ghost pals.
Well, I want to be a ghost.
One thing. Just
I only ask for one thing.
Come on, please, Val.
And then you would, like, die in this scenario and, like, you know, kind of probably, I mean, then it kind of gets into, like, causality, you know, of, like, well, if we stop the ritual, then, like, did we stop it in the past, or do we, like, stop it for that day, or, like, what's the, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But, like, won't know until we try it.
Agmar will understand, I promise.
Ghost adventures. Ghost adventures.
But
ghost
your mom
adventures.
Will murder us again.
Ghost, oh.
Yeah.
And also, there's no guarantee we would end up like you as someone who would be able to remember day after day. We could end up like one of those amorphous blobs.
And
you would have to deal with all of us while we try to reach 20% enlightenment.
And that could take a while.
Pass.
I love that we're just talking far out of his element. We're not saying no.
He goes up to Self. Self, hear me out. This wasn't part of a grand plan to, you know, equip you guys with, like, a new tool or weapon or, not, you know, secret knowledge or whatever. It was to bring us together, right? You know, bring us together as family. And then, like, family. And he, like, gestures, like, from you to him to you. Yeah. Like, maybe we're, like maybe you're, like, my, like, great, great, like, grandkid.
Self kind of looks between the far eye, like, a family, and then reunion. Looks over at Checkers.
Self, please. Please. We have to do this right. I never ask you for anything.
And then it's, like, about, like, not the power of friendship, it's, like, the power of family.
I suppose with various adoptions, it could have been possible that at some point one ancestor or another of ours might have shared space.
Wait, we talking family trees? I have a template for this.
Is this where we learn that the dragonborn were evolved from the crime?
Far, I'm going to ask you a lot of questions about what you remember of every person in your family, and we're going to create detailed notes.
Pass. Well, I have displayed, I think, 4 very good ideas that are very beneficial. Are they technically the best, most complete ideas I have? No, but I think you should reconsider. Maybe we should, like, circle back on those first. I can get you an Ultra Giant. I'd like to just reiterate that before we continue. I could probably, like, help you, like, strengthen the city defenses against the Ultra Giant, like, a little bit, or, like, maybe a lot of it. I don't know. Probably. But, like, that's, like, boring. But I can.
Why is that boring? It's very impressive.
He just glares at you. And to think, I almost adopted Self. Talking to me like this.
I mean, if you still want to adapt Self, I can help with the paperwork. Agmar.
So I can do that. I can help you there. And I maybe have another idea that is conflicting for me. It's, on one hand, very, very exciting. On the other hand, it's very, very scary. Honestly, I think you might actually, in a way, be doing me a favor by helping do this, by if this is the course of action. But when I was, you know, kind of bopping around with Kaskrin and looking at, like, the cool stuff, right? The cool stuff room.
Oh, yeah.
That I took you to.
Yeah.
Well, it just kind of got me thinking. You know, I've been trying to figure out, like, why we're in this, like, big loop, right? Over and over and over and over again, right? And
it hadn't really occurred to me before, but like, what if there's a new object of focus in the city, and do you guys want to steal it with me?
Oh.
Fascinating.
You know, like a lot of meeting, a lot of emotion, sunfall, end of the world, blah, blah, blah. And like, they haven't done a new one of those in kind of a long time, but like, I mean...
Would we make a new one?
No, I think it was made in Sunfall, and now is, you know, trapped all these spirits in kind of like a hellacious loop of never-ending existence and or torment.
If we steal it, does that then make you cease to be?
Well, yeah.
And can we steal it if it's, you know, same stuff of the city?
Well, I figure object of focus, if it's doing its thing, right? So it's probably, like, it's probably real. And I think I have a hot lead on where it probably is. Because there's only two places I haven't been.
Oh. So do we check Celestia's bedroom first?
That's canonically Mango's laugh. Yeah. He's now leveled up that he can have his own laughs. So, heist?
You know, Uncle Chaturanga, I think that's a fantastic idea.
Heist?
You son of a gun, I'm in.
Excellent. See you all next time.
Heist!
Bye, everybody!
Bye!
Bye. And in the same way that the bracer reaches out to him, he reaches out towards his ethereal bracer. And he will accept the reaching, the soul binding.
This is becoming even more intimate than a normal thing of wrestling. And I think that's very on brand, and I'm fine with it.
I really want the bracer itself to be non-magical, but the sweat is what enhances it.
I just want the writing to say juicy.
Yeah.
that's what to us English readers, that's how it reads. But in ancient script says Thixius. It's just a different alphabet.